RadioInfluence.com.
Welcome to the February 27th edition of the MMA Report Podcast with Daniel Galvan. I am Jason Foyd, and this week's edition of the podcast is brought to you by Roman, and we'll tell you a little bit more about Roman later on in the show. But of course, this week's main topic is going to be UFC 235, which is on Saturday night at the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada. We have got a tremendous fight card. Really looking forward to this fight card on Saturday night, so we're going to break it all down. We'll rank the fights from the fights that we're most interested in to the fight that we are least interested in. Just a overall great fight card that the UFC's putting together on Saturday night. Plus, going to have two interviews with two fighters who have upcoming fights in the UFC. You're going to hear my conversation with Ian Heinisch, who's going to be taking on Tom Breeze at UFC on ESPN Plus 5 on March the 16th. Also, you'll hear my conversation with Zach Otto, who fights Alex Morono next week at UFC on ESPN Plus 4. Plus, we'll talk about the PFL signing a broadcasting deal with ESPN, George St. Pierre announcing his retirement, and Dylan Danis receiving his suspension for his role in the UFC 229 brawl. But Daniel, man, how you doing, man?
Jason, I'm going to be completely honest with you. I'm a little under the weather, but I'm also thinking about filing a lawsuit against Airborne. You know, I knew I was going to be sick 6 days ago. I had a sore throat. That's a telltale sign that a cold's about to hit my body. And Jason, I drank a whole lot of Airborne. It didn't work. I just got more sick. So I'm thinking about suing Airborne. Probably don't have the legal help for that. But I'm starting to get better. And the only thing that's going to make me feel better is some solid mixed martial arts. And by God, UFC 235, it's everything the UFC Fight Night wasn't. I mean, the UFC Fight Night this past weekend was all right, but in terms of name value and fights, things that are going to bring me to watch this product and invite my friends over and eat a whole bunch of buffalo wings, UFC 235, definitely, I am so excited.
Well, hell, just look at a couple weeks ago, the pay-per-view in Australia of what you got for $65 in comparison to what you're going to get on Saturday for $65. I mean, it's just a great lineup. I'm really looking forward, to watching these fights. I will say this. I think it's very clear what the top five fights are on this fight card, and one of those fights is not on the main card. I'm not big on the Tisha Torres fight, just because, and we'll talk about this in a little bit. Tisha Torres is probably fighting for her job in the UFC. I mean, she's lost two in a row heading into this one, but to me, it's very clear who the top five fights are. Now, your order may be different based on who you're talking to, but to me, it's clear. Joan Smith, Woodley Usman, Lawler Askren, Garbrandt Munoz, Stevens, Magomed Sharipov is by far the top five fights on this fight card.
I disagree with you slightly.
Okay. What fight would you put in over one of those?
The fight I would put on over Magomed Sharipov Stevens, which I have at number six, is I personally, and I have this fight at number five, I really want to see Serkinov take on Johnny Walker, just because I want to see what happens when Johnny Walker takes on a top 15 light heavyweight. That sole excitement, because since we saw this guy run through Khalil Roundtree, run through Justin Liddett, it's like I'm really excited to see where his ceiling is. Now, the fight between Magomed Sharipov and Jeremy Stephens, look, that's a barn burner of a fight. That's a great firefight. But the hype behind Johnny Walker, that's got me breaking that fight in the top five over Magomed Sharipov and Stevens.
I get why you say that. I mean, it is my number six fight. And it's interesting because Jones Smith is not my number one fight, just because I think it's going to be Jones is going to be a walk in the park for him. I don't see Anthony Smith bringing. I mean, look, Anthony Smith could catch him, but one of the things I found very interesting, I was watching the Inside the Octagon, where Dan Hardy is breaking down or previewing this fight, and he's breaking down the rematch between Jones and Gustafsson. And I just found it so interesting that in talking about the rematch between Jones and Gustafsson, that he said he felt like watching it, that Jones was having a sparring fight to where he was going up against somebody that he thought had zero chance to beat him. And he just fought him like he was a sparring partner. And then, of course, you know, when he went for the kill, one of the things he noted was in that, I think it was in the first round, where Jones kind of did this, you know, half single leg takedown. And he says, he goes, by the way he entered, you can tell he really wasn't trying to take him down. He was just trying to mess with Gustafsson, that, hey, if I want to take you down, I'll take you down. But to me, my number one fight is Woodley and Usman. My number two fight is Lawler and Askren.
I got that flipped, but I agree with your sentiment. The John Jones fight, Anthony Smith contest, that's my number three fight. And it just comes down to the fact that for John Jones, this is probably one of the least exciting challengers we've seen thus far compete for him and his title. Anthony Smith absolutely deserves the title shot. I mean, who doesn't after knocking out Rashad and Shogun and tapping out Volkan Ozdemir? He's definitely on a hot streak, but just not super excited for this matchup. I feel like it's a foregone conclusion, which the exciting part about that is if Anthony Smith does pull off the upset, and we've seen amazing upsets in the UFC, I mean, that will be one of the all-time greatest upsets in the UFC.
Yeah.
And the time we see those upsets is usually, obviously, when it comes to the second half of a great legend's career. And I do think John Jones, despite how young he was when he had success in the UFC, I do think he's in the back nine. So sometimes in the later part of their career, there's a slip up. Anthony Smith has the power to take advantage of that slip up. The last six times he's won the UFC, he's finished his opponents. He's a dangerous man, but that's absolutely why that fight's number three. And then the reason why I switched one and two is, look, I'm excited for Woodley Usman. The one scared part I am as an observer is there's a chance this develops into a wrestle contest that isn't super exciting in some rounds. There's also a chance Tyron Woodley and Usman go out and, you know, their wrestling evens out and they try and test their stand-up. So it could be exciting. And just the fact they're competing to prove who's the best 170-pounder in the world is exciting. But the reason why Askren Lawler's there is because I'm just damn excited to see Ben Askren in the UFC. It's not something I thought I would have ever seen. I really thought this guy was retired. I thought him and Dana White butted heads too much. And it just wasn't going to be a reality. And so I'm so excited to see what he can do in the UFC. And I'm also really excited because they didn't give him a guy that he can just run through. They gave him one of the toughest challengers he could have possibly had in the UFC in Robbie Lawler.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, if, you know, what, you know, Robbie could easily catch him. It's what makes that matchup interesting is, look, we know how dominating Ben Askren is on the ground. I was actually, by the way, speaking of Kamaru Usman, I was watching his interview on the Luke Thomas show and actually finally heard the origin of the Marty from Nebraska nickname. I had never heard the origin of this and what it goes to actually his wrestling days where Kamar's, I want to say it was his high school coach, where he just didn't know how to pronounce his first name. And so he just goes, all right, I'm just calling you Marty. And earlier this week, it's now been changed because I just looked. On his Sherdog page, it said for the nickname, it was Marty from Nebraska / the Nigerian Nightmare. I was like, oh, man. And he said, like, and when they did that pre-fight press conference a couple weeks ago, man, I mean, Woodley and Askren were just killing Usman. And for people who have not seen their scrum earlier this week, in LA, you can go over to theMMAReport.com to watch that. I mean, it was straight comedy, just those two guys going back and forth. And it's one of those things where I can see a scenario. If Kamar Usman wins on Saturday night and Ben Askren wins, I could see Ben Askren leapfrogging Colby Covington.
Yeah, I could see that for sure. I could see him almost leapfrogging Colby Covington if Woodley wins. You know, I just think the thing is Colby Covington is just not hot right now. He doesn't have the momentum. And this is a sport where title shots are given in the moment. There isn't a whole lot of long-term thinking with what's next in the UFC, as is the case of the fact that the featherweight champion is going to compete for the interim lightweight title. The UFC is the short-term promotion, and Ben Askren is in a better position this weekend to put himself in a title shot position than Colby Covington is. Colby Covington already had his success in the cage, and man, his momentum in terms of like popularity, I think, has gone down. Excitement to pay money to watch him fight has gone down. The thing he does have is the fact that he literally won the interim welterweight championship, which has seemingly disappeared.
Come on, Daniel. Out of thin air. Interim titles don't mean crap.
They don't. Oh, yeah. They don't. And that's a conversation we can have later in the show when we discuss another interim title fight. It's nuts.
Two interim title fights on the same card.
They don't mean crap. But, Jason, and the thing is, as an observer of mixed martial arts, simply put, let's say Ben Askren goes out there and beats Robbie Lawler and is convincing. I mean, who would you rather see compete for the welterweight championship as a fan of the sport? Would you rather see Ben Askren or Colby Covington?
I mean, look, Covington should get the title shot. Now, I think he's misplayed his cards here. And look, I don't know what happened in negotiations between him and the UFC. I mean, that's only him and his manager, Dan Lambert, know exactly what kind of go on there. But on the outside looking in, it looks like he's misplayed his cards. And Kamaru Usman has played his cards correctly. And he's put himself in this matchup. And I think when you look at Woodley's title defenses, this is the most well-rounded fighter that Woodley has competed against since becoming champion.
This is absolutely the guy who, you know, and there's a lot of good wrestlers at 170. A lot of them Woodley hasn't faced yet. And Usman's wrestling is really right up there with anyone Woodley's competed against as champion. So that in itself is a difference. And that difference goes along with what you talk about, the well-rounded approach. I mean, we've seen how solid Kamaru's stand-up is. You're right, this is a tough challenge. There's a great chance we end Saturday with Usman as champion. But the thing I keep going down to when it comes to breaking down this fight on who I think will win is, I'm a big fan of Woodley's wrestling game. Usman's wrestling game, it seems like he's employed that more lately. The big difference is, I've really, watching the way Woodley's performed in some of his more recent championship defenses, his stand-up has gone from, like, pretty good to, dang, this is elite. Mm-hmm. This is great striking, like, high, high level in this division. So that in and of itself is the reason why I'm picking Woodley, is the fact that I'm really enamored with what he can do on the feet, in addition to the fact that he has the skill set plus the strength with his stand-up. So that's why I think Woodley's going to win this fight. I actually think he's going to get a finish on the feet. And that's just because I think the wrestling will cancel out. Or if Kamaru gets takedowns, Woodley will have the ability to get back up. And on the feet, analyzing what I think is going to happen, I think Woodley's going to win it.
Yeah, I like Woodley to win the fight as well. I mean, I thought it was – the interview I was mentioning about Usman being on Luke Thomas' show, and they kind of – Luke brought up the question of – it was kind of about how, you know, Usman has, we've never really seen him get tired in a fight. You know, I mean, the guy's been in 5-round fights, and, you know, I mean, even most recently, his last past couple fights. And, you know, and Usman kind of brought something, he's like, you know, Woodley, he goes, he's got a good gas tank, he goes, but sometimes he can use a lot of energy. And so I think that'll be the fascinating thing. If this fight gets to the fifth round, can maybe Usman, maybe where Woodley, you know, really goes hard in the first couple rounds trying to finish this fight, can maybe Usman, you know, counter that. But, yeah, I like Woodley to win. You know, so, I mean, obviously, like John Jones to retain his title. I mean, it's one of these things I've been thinking about this for the past couple of days. Like, how does Anthony Smith win this fight? And the only two scenarios I come up with is Jones literally is not taking him serious at all. He, you know, is half-assing in training. Or Anthony Smith just catches him with a punch. I just keep seeing I was watching that Thiago Santos fight that Anthony Smith had, and I just, for some reason, I think we're going to see another body shot knockout.
Well, that is going to make John Vellante like cough up some more blood after the way he got put away last weekend. Delayed reaction. That's it, man. You're calling your shot there, Jason. You know, the thing is, John Jones, man, with those long limbs, he can really poke at a guy, attack every part of his body. And, man, if you're right, that'd be great. And, I think I totally agree with you. John Jones has a track record of not taking opponents seriously. The way he's talked about his pre-fight preparations before some of his big championship fights leads you to think this is a guy who at times when he doesn't take guys seriously and takes for granted he's going to win, doesn't put in the work. Or if he does put in the work, the problem is he also parties. He also has a lot of play time in the pre-fight camps. He may be a different man. I think having his career taken away from him and held in front of him and saying, we can take it away from you, maybe that's woken him up. Honestly, if I had to guess, I don't think so. I really do think John Jones is the same person, just because I think the last straw was the walk through the park with Ariel Helwani a few years ago. I thought this was the new John Jones when he went on a little stroll. That poor cameraman just holding the camera for like 50 minutes walking backwards through a park. I mean, I know he probably had a camera vest, but anyways.
That would have been Casey Lydon.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, look. I thought
that was a new John Jones.
Look, the one thing is we should never think we know an athlete. We should never, unless you're around that person all the time, you don't know. And I have no idea how John's living his life. But when you look at Anthony Smith, I mean, this guy has been on a great run, but you're talking about his best win is Volkan Ozdemir. That is his best win. You look at this run, six wins in his last seven fights, you know, and all stoppage wins. The wins are against Elvis Mutapchic, Andrew Sanchez, Hector Lombard, Rashad Evans, Shogun Hua, and Volkan Ozdemir. The funniest part, I think they played in the countdown show where they're showing the highlights of the Hector Lombard fight, and it's like after I think it was either after the first or second round where Anthony Smith's like, you know my name now, Hector? You know my name now, Hector? Like, it was just like a hilarious moment, but it's also like when you look at two of his three wins at light heavyweight, it's against aging fighters. And look, yes, Volkan Ozdemir is a top 10, top 5-ish light heavyweight. But this is a different level. And I think Jones, you know, it's a stoppage win. And I don't see this fight hitting the third round. I think it's over within the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, John Jones could actually party most days of the week and still win this fight.
Look, are you like me and still fearful this fight doesn't happen?
I'm not fearful. I'm just dead inside with John Jones.
You're expecting
I'm
it.
I'm dead inside. Yeah. Don't care anymore. Because if it doesn't happen, whatever.
Like, now, I thought the weird thing was when the Nevada hearing happened on, Monday. John Morgan had a story about how the commission will basically saying we're going to release the drug test results when we want to release them. I'm like, that don't sound fishy. Like, if you got drug test results back, why don't you just announce it?
Yeah. I think restricting access or leaving it up to your own judgment is always an issue when it comes to governing bodies. So, yeah, totally. And honestly, if the fight gets canceled, it'll probably happen as soon as we stop recording.
Even if it got canceled, I'm still forking over $65 to watch this pay-per-view.
Absolutely, because if we're ranking our fights, which is what we did, Jones and Smith wasn't a part of our top two.
That was my number three fight.
Absolutely. And, you know, you also have a fight like Cody Garbrandt versus Pedro Munoz, which is also part of my top five. Another fight.
That's my number five. And that's you know, I think the question is kind of, you know, how does Cody bounce back? I mean, that's really the question you have here after those, you know, two knockout losses against TJ Dillashaw. This is the first time since we've seen him of August of last year. I mean, and Pedro Munoz has been on an absolute roll here. And, of course, we'll see what happens at 135 pounds. You know, you look at Pedro Munoz, you know, both of his recent losses have come by split decision against John Dodson and Jimmy Rivera. His other loss in the UFC, you have to go back to 2014 against Rafael Assuncao. But this guy's been on an absolute roll, a tremendous TKO win in his last matchup against Brian Caraway. By the way, one of his wins recently comes against Russell Doan, who actually is headlining a card in Hawaii this weekend. You head over to themmareport.com to see my interview with him. I mean, I like Cody to win this fight, and it's just mainly because the power advantage he clearly has in the fight.
Yeah, I think he's going to drop Pedro Munoz a couple times in this fight. I don't know if he'll be able to finish him because Pedro's tough. And yeah, we're talking about Cody Garbrandt. He's trying to get a rebound. And Pedro Munoz at 135 is just an absolutely tough ask to rebound against because, man, things are firing on all cylinders for him. In his most recent fights, he's looking the best he's ever looked. Mm-hmm. This is a guy who came into the UFC on short notice as a big-time prospect and didn't really perform up to his potential, but that usually happens. And he kind of grew into his potential and surpassed that greatly. He's a well-rounded fighter, excellently skilled, solid grappler, great stand-up fighter, really good in the gaps, and a guy who can absolutely take advantage of a fighter in Cody Garbrandt, who's coming off a tough loss, and a guy who, again, Cody Garbrandt's not getting that big of a step down from his most recent fight. Pedro Munoz is right there when it comes to being a championship-level fighter, so it is going to be a tough fight, but it is a fight I think Cody Garbrandt's going to use his stand-up to win here.
Yeah, I mean, we briefly touched on Lawler Askren. That's my number two fight. You know, really, it's just I think it's going to be is can Ben get the fight to the ground? Because clearly, we know what his game plan is. He is not going to sit there and stand and trade strikes with Robbie Lawler. We both know that's the case. But yeah, there is kind of this thought with Robbie Lawler of, man, what are we going to see? Because it's been a while. You know, since we've seen him, it was December of 2017, the last time we saw Robbie, which was that decision loss against Rafael Dos Anjos. And then prior to that, he had the win over Donald Cerrone. And one of the interesting thing to kind of mention here is, you know, you look at the Woodley Usman fight, Lawler Askren fight, we've got, you know, two gyms competing against each other. When you talk about, you know, Hard Knocks and Rufus Sport, Hard Knocks, of course, down in South Florida and Rufus Sport up in Milwaukee. I mean, you know, it's just, It's a fascinating matchup because, man, you know if Robbie wins, oh, Dana is going to go all in on Askren at the post-fight press conference. You know he is.
Yeah, it's like, Dana, you can still promote him. Don't do it.
I truly wonder, is Dana rooting against Ben or is he rooting against him, or is he sitting there going, man, this guy can talk. We don't really have a lot of that. Man, he's a guy we could probably promote because of how he talks. And the social media battles that Ben Askren's had with the UFC Twitter account have been tremendous.
Absolutely. He is a fire keg. I mean, this guy, if he beats Robbie Lawler, he knows how to sell himself. He knows how to get his personality over. And people will migrate. Either they'll love him or hate him. In a UFC where there isn't a whole lot of stars, and honestly, you look at stars that could develop into fighters that could develop into superstars, Ben Askren's a primary candidate to develop into a money-making draw. So if you're Dana White, if you got any brain cells, you better hope he wins this fight. Emotionally, you probably want him to lose.
Yeah.
And I think he is going to lose, though. When this fight was announced, I thought Ben Askren,
man, I don't know,
would be my pick. But the more and more I think about it, the fact that Ben Askren just hasn't been there in the cage with a top, tippy-top welterweight, mm-hmm. and God knows how long. He practically retired. We know how good he is at wrestling. And the thing is, the more I think about it, just Robbie Lawler's wrestling defense is so exceptional, and his stand-up is so exceptional. And the gap between Askren's stand-up and Robbie Lawler's stand-up is so great that I can't not pick Robbie Lawler to win this fight.
Well, you got to think about it. The last time Askren fought was a month before the last time Robbie fought in November 24th, 2017, which was a 57-second win against Shinya Aoki. I mean, really, you probably have to go back to 2013, the last time Ben Askren fought someone you might consider elite. Andrei Kereshkov, but
yeah,
he absolutely, I mean, that was one of the most dominating performances I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's probably the last lead.
Douglas Lima, 2012. I mean, if you want to go back, you know, a couple of fights before that. I mean, I remember I was there for his fight against Carl Amasu, and I remember that I was a couple of days leading up to that. There was a lot of people who thought, man, Carl's going to be able to rock him. And I mean, he just went out there and just took Carl down at will. And that's the thing is, you know, right when this fight starts, he's coming to take him down. And if he gets Robbie down, I don't think Robbie's getting up.
I don't know. That could be true. And the other negative for Robbie is he's really old and he's really battle tested.
Turns 37 here in 2 weeks.
And you mentioned the gaps since last time he fought too. That also
a lot of unknowns.
Those gaps matter more as fighters age, and Robbie Lawler's older. He has a whole lot of cage time. He's been a part of a lot of wars and a lot of hard training. So guys like that are always vulnerable at the end of their careers. For Ben Askren, the negative is really when you go up and down the amount of every fighter he's beaten, no one jumps out to me as a fighter who has good wrestling defense at the time of the fight.
No.
At the time of the fight. Koreshkov and Liam, I think, are much better in that area in 2019. But in 2013 and 2012, no, absolutely not. So that's another thing. There really hasn't been a guy to push Askren back on that wrestling defense. So that's why this fight.
And Robbie's got a good takedown defense, but also, I mean, Ben Askren's another level.
Yeah, that's the thing. Ben Askren is an elite wrestler, but I think the thing I keep going back to is the gap in the striking. It's just too big.
I mean, that's where the fight starts. I mean, that, you know, the question ultimately is does he get the fight to the ground? If he gets the fight to the ground, I think it's Askren. And but yeah, it's a fascinating matchup. I'm really interested to see how this one plays out between those two. My number four fight is Jeremy Stephens versus Beat Magomed Sharipov. By the way, if you've not seen the meme that Jeremy Stephens put out where he took the picture of the fight announcement, and he put Daniel Stern? Is that the guy from the Home Alone actor?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
and he put his face over his beat. It was just awesome. But then the interview that Jeremy Stephens had this week of kind of after the Aldo loss, I mean, you know, and all that, just very, very scary to hear kind of what was going on with him. And it's kind of interesting, you know, I mean, you know, this is, you know, the question is Jeremy Stephens on the downside of his career? But, you know, for Zabit, I mean, this is, you know, a step up in competition.
Yeah, I think if you look at the next three fights I'll probably talk about, very similar matchups in terms of proven commodity or a guy who's somewhat proven. Jeremy, in this case, is incredibly proven. He's had one of the better runs. He's coming off one of the better runs in his entire career. Obviously coming off loss Aldo, but the wins over Choi and Emmett and Melendez are great. And the formula is that versus a guy or a girl who has a lot of potential, unbeaten in the UFC, and a massive step up. Massive step up. That's the case here.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, you're talking about UFC wins. Yeah. Are Mike Santiago, Shaymon Moraes, Kyle Bochniak, and Brandon Davis.
Yeah. And in this case, Jeremy Stephens is my pick. In this case, I'm going with the veteran. Yeah,
I'm with you.
I just think the stand-up is going to be too much in Stephens' favor.
Yeah, I mean, that to me is just, it's a mess. You know, I'm not saying Magomed Sharipov can't win this fight. I mean, I think he's actually the betting favorite on this one. But man, I think Jeremy Stephens, that power that he does have, and I think he's going to bring the fight. You know, I think what you think about that fight that Bochniak had against Magomed Sharipov, where he just brought the action. I think that's what you're going to see in just higher level. So I'm interested to kind of see how one goes. My number five is Garbrandt Munoz. We both mentioned already. Our number six fight is Serkinov versus Walker. I mean, I think the thing with that, why that matchup is interesting is, you see, Johnny Walker's got the intangibles to potentially be a star. He has the intangibles. But Saturday night's going to be a really good indication of, can those intangibles also equal a guy who goes out there and beats a legit top 10 light heavyweight?
Totally. Yeah, if we're doing that list of guys that could be superstars, Johnny Walker's there. He's the type of guy that can skip the line to a title shot. That's how good he is, how exciting he is. And there's all the hype in the world, this is when he's most vulnerable. This is the test. This will let us know today, where is Johnny Walker as a fighter? It's one thing to do it against guys who are on the fringes of the UFC, but this is a fight against Misha Serkinov, who's a proven fighter in the UFC, a proven light heavyweight, a guy who's kind of hung around at 8 through 15 ranking. And if he goes out there and performs, it's ready. Let's put some coal in the back of the train. Let's go straight on it, because big time test. I think Johnny Walker's probably going to win it. My prediction is a first round knockout. But look, Misha Serkinov's a great fighter, great grappler, real proven veteran. I'm just completely blinded by Johnny Walker hype, and I can't wait to see his post-fight interview.
And like you said just a little while ago, this is another example of a fighter taking a big step up in competition. You know, my number eight fight is a Tisha Torres fight against Zhang. She's taking a huge step up in competition. And I think part of the storyline with this fight is if Tisha Torres loses, I think there's a good chance she's getting cut from the UFC because that'll be three losses in a row. And look, her fights go the distance. And that's not exactly the type of fighter the UFC wants.
Yeah. Yeah, since day one, her fights haven't really delivered. Since day one, her fights have just been, you know, things that are going the distance that aren't super exciting. The poor thing for her is, like, her three losses are against tough fighters. It's against Andrade and Joanna and theoretically Willie Zhang. This fight is also another one where I look in and I see a fight between a fighter and Zhang who has a lot to prove. And a fighter in Tisha Torres, proven commodity in the UFC. And, you know, for Zhang, today, I think you can make the case that she is the most successful Chinese mixed martial arts fighter of all time. I mean, if she beats Tisha Torres, she's for sure that. Mm-hmm. There just hasn't been a whole lot of good Chinese fighters. And talk about potential. Talk about who the UFC wants to win. They want Zhang to win.
Mm. Oh, totally.
China's a huge market.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
I mean, I don't know about the politics of the country. I don't know if people can actually, like, pay money to watch the UFC there. I don't know how it works. I feel like it doesn't work that well in terms of, like, in China getting money on, like, non-live events to America. I think that's actually really hard. But you could run an event in China, I think. I could be wrong about that, too.
In the U.S., it'd be, you know, early morning one, you know, 6, 7, you know, prelim start,
but
3 a.m.
That would be all about the live, like much like how that Bellator event this past weekend was all about the live event. If you could run a Chinese event in China with a Chinese star, oh man, that live event would be great. Again, I don't really know how it works there in terms of economic potential for outside people.
Yeah.
Regardless, gosh, she has real big potential.
Where does this fight rank on your list of ranking down these fights?
Well, I have it at 7 because I'm really excited about Zhang. Torres is tough. I think she'll win as the better stand-up fighter. So does that mean you said 8? Does that mean you have another fight above this one?
Correct.
Which one is it?
Cody Stamann versus Alejandro Perez.
Yeah, that's my number 8 fight. Well, what gets you hyped about that one?
You know, it's a key matchup in the bantamweight division. How does Cody respond from that loss against Aljamain Sterling? I mean, you know, and look, Aljo is one of the top 135 pounders in the world. And, of course, Alejandro Perez has been on a roll. You know, when you look at, you know, his you know, four-fight winning streak, you know, he hasn't lost since 2015 at UFC 188. So I think it's from what it kind of means for the bantamweight division, that's what interests me about that fight.
Yeah, to me, it's same ranking there. It's another matchup between high-level fighters. I think after that, the card really drops off in a big way.
Yeah, after that I think when you're ranking 9 through 13, I think these are going to be the four fights that are going to be there.
Well, five. Yeah, because you got
five.
Sanchez Gall fight above the prelims.
Yeah, I mean, Gall Sanchez, I put it number 9. I think that potentially has a fight to where we feel really bad about Diego Sanchez after it's over. I do wonder if Diego can make this a firefight quickly. How does Mickey Gall react? And I wonder, is Mickey Gall going to try to get that out of Diego to make it an easier path for him to get the fight to the ground? I think Diego wins by submission. 10, I got Vera and Frankie Saenz. Of course, Frankie Saenz took this, replaced Thomas Almeida in this fight. And then the final three, my number 11, Shabazian Bird, 12, Viana Cyphers, and then 13, Mazzani and Chiazon.
Yeah, I got Sanchez Gall in the same spot you do. I just like watching Diego Sanchez fight, but it does get sad as time goes on in terms of the rest. Yeah, 10 is Saenz and Vera. I feel like that should be, I don't know, I'm looking forward to that one. Number 11, Mazzani Chiazon. Number 12, Bird and Shahbazyan. And 13, Viana and Cyphers. I think Viana is just going to go in and tap out Cyphers pretty quickly. Signs and Vera's, you know, Vera's pretty talented. I think he'll beat Signs. I think Shahbazyan will take out Bird, and I guess Mizani over Chiesa.
I just remember Shahbazyan's last fight, and just the third round, it was just he was just so much in survival mode to get to, you know, to get to the end.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, and so, but yeah, I'm really looking forward to watching these fights. You know, on Saturday, of course, the TV prelims are on ESPN. Of course, your main card on pay per view. So I'm really looking forward to these fights, and you know, I think it should be a great night of fights.
Keyword being should.
It should be. But of course, you know, we appreciate everyone that checks out the MMA Report podcast every week. Of course, if you're not subscribing, do that on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play. Really appreciate give us a rating and review. Appreciate all the 5-star reviews that we do have on Apple Podcasts. Of course, this week's podcast is presented by Roman. Guys, we are terrible at taking care of our health, whether it's a knee injury, back injury, or something worse. We are usually more comfortable just rubbing some dirt on it than seeing a doctor. I'm guilty of it myself. I'm sure you're guilty of it as well. Quite frankly, I hate going to see the doctor. It's something I really don't want to do, but it is something that we have to do. And the same is true for erectile dysfunction. Studies show 70% of guys who experience ED don't get treated for it. Thankfully, Roman created an easy way to get checked out by a doctor and get treated for ED online.
Yeah, man. Roman is a one-stop shop where licensed U.S. physicians can diagnose ED and ship medication right to your door. With Roman, the thing is there's no waiting rooms. There's no awkward face-to-face conversations or uncomfortable trips to the pharmacy. You can handle everything discreetly online, everything. All you have to do is visit GetRoman.com/MMAReport. That's visit GetRoman.com/MMAReport. Fill out a brief medical onboarding, chat with the doctor, and get an FDA-approved ED meds delivered to your door in discreet, unmarked packaging. Guys, go online and get checked by the doctor. Erectile dysfunction is a problem that guys don't tackle, but with Roman, it's really easy, so take care of it.
And for a free online visit, go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport. That's GetRoman.com/MMAReport for a free online visit. GetRoman.com/MMAReport. And we do appreciate their support of the MMAReport podcast and always appreciate our listeners showing support for the people that do advertise here on the MMAReport podcast. But right now, you're going to hear my conversations with two UFC fighters. Up first, you're going to hear my conversation with Ian Heinisch, who's going to be fighting here on March 16th in London as he's going to take on Tom Breeze at UFC on ESPN Plus 5. And then you're going to hear my conversation with Zach Otto, who fights next weekend in Wichita at UFC on ESPN Plus 4 as he takes on Alex Morona. Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that's going to be part of UFC on ESPN Plus 5. He's actually now the third opponent for Tom Breeze. And I appreciate the time, man. How did this fight come together for you?
You know, I've been looking for a fight for a little while. You know, I was hoping to fight David Branch on the Brooklyn card, but he turned that down. So I've just been staying ready, and, you know, Caesar got hurt. And so I get to step in, just like I stepped in when Tom Breeze got hurt when he was supposed to fight Caesar. So just funny how it worked out.
What goes through your mind when you hear someone's turned you down as an opponent?
You know, I just love the matchup. So, you know, it's kind of disappointment. But at the same time, it's like, I guess they see me as a huge threat to them. So, you know, kind of mixed emotions with that. But I would rather have the fight than not.
I mean, obviously, that's something you don't expect for it to happen at a UFC-type level. I'm sure early on in your career, this probably happened a ton of times. I mean, could you even count how many times someone has turned you down as an opponent?
No, a lot. I mean, getting my first fight in the UFC was super difficult. Like all those lower level, like Charles Byrd and Kevin Holland, like those guys turned me down. So, you know, I was grateful that Caesar took that fight, and I'm happy that Tom's going to take that fight.
Is it just frustrating? Is that about the best way to kind of, you know, sum it up when you hear that stuff? I mean, or do you take it as a compliment?
you know, it's more frustrating than a compliment because it's like we're at the highest level and we're here to fight, make money, and see who's the best. So I don't know why they're not doing their job, because that's what their job is, to fight. So it's more frustrating.
I had a chance to have your talk to your coach Mark Montoya recently, and I've been talking to Mark for years, and I've really felt for a long time he just wasn't getting the credit he deserves for what he's been able to do with the team there. What does Mark mean to you, and has there been some type of advice he's given you over the years that's really stuck in?
Yeah, you know, he's given me a ton of advice throughout my whole career. You know, one of the main reasons I'm still in Colorado because of family and friends, but also Mark Montoya, my teammates. And, you know, he's told me from day one, this is the best gym in the world. And now we're ranked number two out of gyms, and next year we're going to be number one. So just believe in the vision, trust in the process, and seeing his vision and following in line. And it's been pretty cool to see it all come together.
Trust the process. That's something that we hear in sports, whether we're talking about MMA or any other sport, all the time. Was there ever a time where, like, you're like, man, I trust the process, but can this process speed up a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, there's like things you think about, oh, I could use this and this would work better for me. But honestly, just kind of giving it all to the system and following it and trusting the process has been the best thing. And it's been a huge part of my success and reason why I've been so successful. So, and a lot of people come to our camp and some people don't trust it, and they get weeded out pretty quick. And the people who buy into the system and they own it, you know, it's, they see huge success.
Motivation obviously is a big thing in sports for you. What is the motivation that gets you up in the morning to go through, the hard training sessions?
You know, I love what I do, so it's fun for me. And this is just my God-given destiny and what I'm put on this earth to do. And not just fight, but use the platform in many ways with my story. And so I'm just enjoying the process, enjoying this journey, because it's a short life of fighting. And so I just try to make the best of it and have fun. And I mean, who wouldn't get it? We get paid to train. And then when we go fight, I mean, that's just the cherry on top.
Obviously, this is, I guess, would say your dream job. Was there another dream job growing up?
No, I mean, this is it. Like, I mean, something with the ocean I would like to do next, like sail around and look for treasure or something like that. But no, this is my dream job. I'm living it.
And of course, you know, you had that article that you wrote about your story on the Players Tribune.
Yeah.
Was there feedback from that article that surprised you?
No, not really. No, it was mostly positive feedback. And, you know, a lot of people are inspired by that story. And people have offered to help me make it into a book. And so we're kind of in the process of doing that. And no, it was all great feedback.
Did you ever think that telling your story could potentially lead to a book?
Yeah, definitely. You know, when I was living it, I kind of went through the library a lot and looked for another story similar to mine. There was just nothing like it and no movies like it. So I believe it will be a book and a movie someday for sure.
Of course. So as we're talking, we're about a month out from this fight against Tom. I mean, what do you see as your key to victory in this matchup?
You know, just staying on track, doing what I do, having fun. And just going to have fun out there and just trust my striking, don't abandon my wrestling, and just put it on and bring the fight to him. And I believe he's not on my level.
Two things you said there. I was actually writing them down. As you said it, you mentioned about having fun and trusting your striking. In terms of having fun, has there been a point where you felt like you weren't having fun?
In the fight I lost in LFA, my only loss, you know, I felt it was just a lot of pressure, and it was like when I was going out to fight, it wasn't like exciting or fun. It was like, let's just get this over with. And I never want fighting to be like that, even though it's super uncomfortable in the back and you get these crazy emotions and feelings, but it's like, just embrace it and enjoy this, because when we get older, we're going to look back and say, these are the good old days, the banner in the locker room and just being with your teammates and your friends and your family and all them coming out to support you and go putting on a show for them and enjoying their company afterward.
Is there a big part of you that wants to run it back with Marcus?
You know, I feel like I've already passed him in rankings. I mean, I'm in the top 20 and he's got a ways to go. So if he wins another two or three fights, then yeah, we can, I would love to get a rematch, but that's not really on my mind right now. I'm looking at the top 10 and breaking into that and getting paid more and just, and keep fighting guys that I'm going to get tested with. So, but yeah, if he can win a few more, I would run that back.
We always hear that cliche, this is the toughest fight of my career. Why would you say Tom is the toughest fight of your career?
You know, every fight in front of you, you gotta take it as your toughest fight, even if the opponent doesn't match that, just because, man, if you take one loss, you get set back huge, and in fighting, anything can happen. So I treat it like it's a world title fight every fight. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be the biggest fight of my career because I get to showcase my skills in front of my European fans. So that's exciting.
Is that one of the most exciting things about this fight is to be able to go overseas?
Yeah, you know, I lived in London in England, North England for about a year and Spain, and I'm going to go back there too. So it's just kind of full circle. And a lot of those people that have never got to see me fight because they live across the pond are going to get to come and see me fight live. And so it's cool.
And of course, I'll be able to see us fight on ESPN Plus. Of course, that's the ESPN streaming service. Ian, man, I appreciate the time. Let everyone know they can follow you out on social media. And I saw you have an advertiser, a sponsor about stepping up people's suits games.
Yeah. So you can find me on Ian Heinisch MMA, Twitter and Instagram, Ian the Hurricane Heinisch on Facebook. And yeah, Captivation is a new company that just basically helps you look good and feel good and confident so you can do what you do best. And what they do best is dress you to look the part, feel good, get you out of your comfort zone a little bit, get some attention on you. And in this sport, that's what you need. So if anyone's looking to get, you know, just doesn't have that gift of picking out the style that they want and the right clothes and what's in style, like me, I don't really... I'm not the best at that like they are. So Captivation is the place. You can find them on my Instagram or Facebook and click on the link and you get 40% off. You mentioned I sent you.
Oh, nice. Nice. So definitely people have to take advantage of that. Ian, man, I appreciate your time and good luck next month.
All right. Thank you so much.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man who has been looking for a particular fight, and he's finally got it. UFC on ESPN Plus 4. Zach Otto finally gets Alex Morono. I feel like it's been like 6 months you've been asking for this fight, and it finally comes together for you.
Yeah, maybe even longer than that. And I have been asking for it, but it does help when the other opponent is asking for it too. So, you know, he's been wanting it. I've been wanting it, so I think it was a easy, make it easy on the matchmakers and let's do it finally.
Usually it kind of works. When you help the matchmakers out, they pretty much make the thing happen, but it did take a while for this thing to come together. Of course, last time we talked was back in December. I know you're a busy man. You're running the gym. You're running your own promotion. Man, how do you balance kind of all these things?
Yeah, actually, it was at our last show. And we had a show, our next show scheduled March 9th. So it was at my last show when I got the word from my manager that I got a fight. And guess what? It's March 9th, which is the same night of our next promotion, you know. So luckily, you know, we knew that things like this were going to be coming up. So my partner, Jake, and I that own the gym and the promotion, we brought on a third partner for the shows. We want to take the show more on the road a little bit, get all over Wisconsin and not just be in Milwaukee. And so the previous state commissioner stopped working that job and came and partnered with Jake and myself. And now we're expanding the Pure Fighting Championships promotion all over Wisconsin for right now. You know, who knows where we'll go to next. But March 9th, when obviously Jake is in my corner helping coach me. So we're going to be gone March 9th in Kansas. Adam and the rest of the crew are going to be going up to run the show in Stevens Point, Wisconsin.
Is that so, from a business side, I mean, to me, if I was in your shoes, I mean, I'd kind of be like, man, I'm going to want to know what's going on with my other business, but you got to be concentrating on the fight.
Yeah, you know, we've got people in position that we trust and know what they're doing. So, I mean, I'm sure Jake especially will be keeping tabs. And, you know, there's a lot of the waiting game that happens in the locker room right before you fight. There's a lot of downtime. So I'm sure Jake will be by his phone and just making sure everything's going smoothly, you know, hundreds of miles away with our other business. But, you know, I'll just be solely focused on the fight and, you know, get the job done that night. Right now, of course, there's a lot that goes into these shows. So, you know, we're busy putting it together and everything, but we just won't physically be there for that night.
Thinking about that downtime you have while you're just sitting in the back waiting for your fight to happen. I was talking to another fighter where they were talking about their workout right before getting ready. And they talked about how sometimes they will try something when they're just warming up. And then magically that thing, they try that in the fight and they had never tried it in training. Has that ever happened to you?
I don't know about that close, like a warm up, but there are techniques that I've learned maybe the day or two before that I won jiu-jitsu matches with that Saturday back in the day. You know, not so much anymore. Like I've been around for a little while now, but early on, for sure. I mean, even some of our amateur fighters, you know, they're taking in so much information. You can only take in so much. Okay, you know, you're getting pretty good. You're ready for your first fight, but you have a ton to learn. Sometimes they learn techniques while we're doing a thorough warm-up, you know, like, oh, this is a great way to defend a rear naked choke. And then an hour later, they're doing it in their fight. You know, they're using that same technique that we just went over in the locker room. So it does happen, but just not as much anymore for myself.
Obviously, when it comes to your fight, you're obviously ecstatic that you finally got this fight against Alex. Why do you like this matchup for yourself?
You know, early on when I first got signed, it was like, man, I'm fighting guys with like either a lot of experience or winning records. And I'm just kind of getting my feet wet and I'm trading, you know, wins and losses. And I'm fighting guys that are 5-2 in the UFC, 3-1, another 5-2 and, or guys with well over 10 UFC fights. And it's like, you know, I'm not trying to chase somebody that's coming off of like 2 losses. You know, I'm not going to call out somebody that is on their way out of getting cut. Like, I want to challenge myself, but I just kind of wanted to get, you know, brought up accordingly. And Alex is one of those guys that is just on paper looks like a really fair matchup. We've both had similar goes of it. We've got similar records. You know, we're both pretty well-rounded. You know, he likes to stand and strike, but at the same time, he's a black belt in jiu-jitsu. You know, we both had this will be our 8th UFC fight. Both of us both have 4 wins in the UFC. There's a lot of similarities on paper. I just feel like it's a fair matchup on paper, one that makes sense, but one that I can win. And, I feel like wherever the fight goes, I'm going to be better than him. And I feel like this is a really important fight with it being my last fight in my current contract. So if I can win here, now that's 3 out of 4. Going into my next contract, and I really want to stay with the UFC. So, you know, a big performance and a big win here can start to get me those bigger paydays and get me up the ladder to where I want to be.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that because I remember the last time we talked, you had mentioned about, you know, there was only a fight left on your UFC deal. I mean, I think outside looking in, people say, oh, man, you know, pressure's on Zach. He's betting on himself, whatnot. But at the end of the day, there's pressure in every fight.
Oh yeah, there's always pressure. I guess I do well under pressure. You know, I've never lost 2 in a row. I kind of like that added pressure. Even though I'm coming off of a win, it's not like, oh, I can coast or like I'm safe or anything like that. Like I'm looking at this like I really need to go in there and perform, and I want to put on an exciting fight, and I want to look for the finish. And I feel like a guy like Alex, I can take the fight wherever I need to go, and I can really use my well-roundedness to try to find a finish. Sometimes when you're fighting like a guy that's a 3-time jiu-jitsu world champion, now all of a sudden you're kind of fighting in a box. You're extremely limited on what you can do. And you know, you got like one way you think you can probably beat him, and you try to keep the fight in that area. With Alex, I feel like, okay, if we're standing, I can finish. If we go to the ground, I can finish. If he's trying to take me down, or I'm trying to take him down, or all these different areas, I just feel like I'm going to be ahead of the curve with him.
I mean, they always talk about these, you know, keys to victory. And hearing you talk there, to me, it just sounds like you're saying, look, I just got to be well-rounded. End of the day, I just got to be, you know, and put myself in best position. But where do you think Alex wants to take this fight?
I don't think I've ever seen the guy go for a takedown, you know. So he uses his grappling to try to keep it standing. So, you know, he talks about him wanting a violent KO in the UFC, and I think he's going to be throwing bombs. You know, I think he's going to want to try to finish me on the feet, and you know, that I think that's his game plan. So we can throw down. You know, he's the one that's been starched before, I haven't, so I think he's got to worry about his chin more than I do. I think he gets too sloppy on the feet. I don't think he's got the power to put me down. So
Before I let you go, I got to ask about your next show, Pure FC. What can people in Wisconsin expect from that one?
We're going up to Stevens Point. They haven't had a show up in Stevens Point for a while, and it's been, I think, a couple of years. And there's a couple of gyms up there that have a lot of fighters and do really well around the state. So it's good to bring a show back to them instead of them always being the out-of-town guys and girls. They actually get to be the local fighters, and, you know, the local gym gets a little bit more exposure and stuff like that. The local gyms do. So it's just a good opportunity for the whole town of Stevens Point to come out. Hopefully people from all over Wisconsin can make it out to the show. And we always put on amateur and professional fights. We've got kickboxing and mixed martial arts going on. So full card. There's like 14, 15 fights as of right now. You know, fights always kind of fall off and come and go and stuff, but that's where we're sitting right now. So, yeah, should be a super cool night.
Talking to regional promoters, they'll always say, you know, hey, I've got about 15 fights, but I know there's a good chance a couple of these fights aren't going to happen.
Yeah, it's so crazy how these matchups. I remember fighting myself and being in those shoes, but now on the other side, fights are up and down and left and right, and it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, I was talking to a regional promoter the other day, and they're like, yeah, I had a fight. They weighed in. Opponent just didn't show up. Weighed in, made weight, and then next day, couldn't find him.
Yeah, there's deadlines for paperwork and stuff. Like, the UFC doesn't mess around, you know. Like, you get a fight, they want your medicals done right now. And appointments are getting scheduled, and you're getting in there ASAP. You know, the fight may not be for a month or weeks or whatever. Yeah. With these guys, it's like you don't have as much control over that. You keep sending them messages, but you're just hoping that they get in and get their blood work done and their physical done. And if it's not done in time, we've had people that, you know, are training really hard, and they think they got a fight, and they think they got a fight, but their opponent just doesn't get their shit in. And next thing you know, the fight's got to get pulled. And that's unfortunate, you know, just because somebody's procrastinating and lazy, like, all that went out the window.
Oh, I mean, I've talked to so many fighters who've gotten a short notice, 1 week fight in the UFC, and it's their UFC debut. And then when you talk to them, like, on a Monday, they're like, yeah, 9 a.m. at this doctor, 11 a.m. at this doctor, 1 I'm here, 3 I'm here. I mean, it's crazy but this is a regulated sport. That's what has to be done.
Yeah, and with the UFC, of course, they want the full extent of all medicals to be done, you know, around Wisconsin, Minnesota. There's different eye exams, and if this one wants blood work, and when the most current physical and stuff. The UFC wants everything, you know, top of the line, as much as you can get done. They've got everything you can think of, from the CT exam, eye exams, blood work, physicals, all that stuff. So it's a lot to do. Yeah, when you first get signed. When I first got signed, I think it was about 2.5 weeks I had. And those first couple of days were just training and sitting in doctor appointment rooms and training, and, you know, till it's all done.
But that was a long time ago, and now we got fight number 8 coming up here. Zach, man, I appreciate the time. Of course, let everyone know they can follow you out on social media. And of course, if you haven't got any sponsors who are supporting you for this one.
Yeah, guys, please follow me on Instagram, just under my name, Zach Otto. And Combat Corner is where I get all my gear and apparel and things like that. So check them out. I'm sure if you're around the MMA community, you know all about Combat Corner. They're the best out there. Continue to get your gear and apparel through them. That's it, man. Thanks a lot, Jason. Thanks for your time.
And there was my conversations with Ian Heinisch and Zach Otto. Appreciate both those men giving me some time to talk about their upcoming fights here on the upcoming UFC on ESPN Plus cards. Also, I do want to mention, be sure to head over to the MMAreport.com. Got a bunch of interviews that are up there. Also, be sure to subscribe to the MMA Report on YouTube to get all of our content up there. Got a conversation with Aaron Jeffries, going to be fighting for the vacant middleweight title next week at BTC 5. He's a Canadian middleweight prospect. Also, mentioned a little earlier, talked to Russell Doan, who's going to be fighting in the main event of Saturday's Destiny MMA in Canada. Also, talked to a couple of fighters that are fighting on Friday at Unified MMA 36, Shane Campbell, Pat Pitlick. You can check out those conversations. Also, you can see the media scrum with Tyron Woodley, Ben Askren. You can see my conversation with Chito Vera and Cody Stamann. So a bunch of interviews up there. Also, Cam Arnold, who's an amateur who fights for New England Fights. You can check that those conversations on the MMAreport.com. But Daniel, really, you know, there's really been two huge news items over the last week. Let's go back to last week first. George St. Pierre announces his retirement. Yeah, I'm not going to believe it.
You think it's a leverage play?
First off, it's clear he was interested in that Khabib fight. Like, okay, you want to believe George St. Pierre based on what he said, but how many times have we seen a boxer, a mixed martial artist announce their retirement and they come back? I mean, I tend to believe this retirement's more serious than his quote unquote first retirement a couple years ago when he, you know, he talked about how he was walking away from the sport, but it's always tough to believe MMA fighter will walk. Hey, look at Vitor Belfort. He's quote unquote retired. Oh no. One championship's gonna, you know, TRT Vitor is about to come back.
Yeah, I get you. When a guy has already retired like Jordan St. Pierre and has returned, you can't be surprised if he comes back again. It's tough because like you do want to, you know, romanticize his career, but it's like, why do it if he's going to come back? He probably will. I mean, look, at the end of the day, George St. Pierre is the best fighter in the history of the UFC to never get popped for steroids.
If Conor McGregor called out George St. Pierre tomorrow, you think GSP doesn't consider it?
Well, that's the dumbest thing about the UFC is frustrating from a business perspective. What I love Conor versus Cerrone, but if you're the UFC, why in the world did you not put together GSP versus Conor McGregor? I don't understand that. I honest to God believe GSP versus Conor McGregor would be the biggest buy rate in UFC history, mm-hmm. without a title on the line, straight up.
Yeah, there doesn't have to be a title on the line.
I think that would have been the biggest pay-per-view in UFC history. I don't think GSP should have fought Khabib, to be honest with you.
That fight to me made no... Like part of that was, like, I'm sitting here going, we've got the UFC lightweight champion essentially begging GSP for a fight. Like, it to me, it's like, you're once again just showing you're the B side of the fight. You're still not an A side, even though you're the champion.
Yeah.
Like, Khabib's a great fighter, but I'm like, man, and I just sat there and I'm like, guys, like, you know, I get how bad you want that fight because I didn't think that was a great fight for it. I don't think that would be a very fun fight to watch.
No, it would all be about the hype for that fight and who would win. But
there'd be like zero trash talking. I don't think that's as big a fight as some people think it would be.
You could be right. I just think GSP said, like, growing up, George St. Pierre meant money. Every GSP fight meant money. Okay. It was just...
I think GSP was at this point in his career where he was picking the best matchups that he felt he could win. Like, I think there is a, you know, look, GSP is one of the best MMA fighters of all time, and he's the greatest welterweight of all time. But Tyron Woodley is starting to build that case of it's becoming a conversation based on, and Woodley, he wasn't talking about it in terms of greatest of all time, but he, you know, he was talking about how kind of the welterweight division has evolved over the years after GSP's long reign as champion. It's a much different welterweight division now than it was when GSP, you know, had his multiple year reign as a king of that division. You know, like, you know, to me, Woodley GSP would have been the fight to make to show who really is the greatest welterweight of all time. I just don't think GSP has any interest in that fight.
Yeah, if you're talking about realistic fights for GSP that he's going to lose, Woodley to me is the toughest matchup he could have taken.
Like, he was so picking Bisping was the smartest thing he could do.
I know, and he got that middleweight championship, and it was, look, Bisping would be the easiest middleweight champ to beat in the UFC. You know, since Dave Manet, you know, that was prime opportunity.
Dave Manet more than anybody else in this industry.
Hey man, don't forget about Dave Manet, man. And he won the title first. You know, don't forget where you came from. It's never going to get easier. As many interim titles as you make, it's never going to get easier than beating Bisping at the end of his career as middleweight champion. And GSP took advantage of that. I think, at the end of the day, if he doesn't fight again, and also before I get to romanticizing his career, the other thing that pays credence to what you're saying is, like, this retirement, the whole conversation revolving around this retirement is that the UFC wouldn't give GSP the fight with their Magomedov. So that makes you think this is a leverage play. So that's why you should be skeptical. If we're romanticizing his career, again, I think GSP is the best UFC fighter to never get popped, never fail a test.
Look, I'm always going to be spectacle of, you know, I'm never going to believe a fighter when they say they're retired.
Yeah.
Just never going to believe them. Because there's just too many examples.
The sad part about the GSP career, if you look at it, is the Johnny Hendricks deal. The fact that he wanted drug testing, he was going to pay for it. And then Johnny Hendricks went and failed a test later on. That's the saddest part.
Yeah. It's when you look at the USADA era of the UFC, there were certain fighters who just, and whether it was age was catching up to them or not, but they were different fighters.
Yeah, Johnny Hendricks is a different fighter. I guess he didn't get popped. I'm sorry, the USADA era. But yeah, he looked like a completely different fighter. And
Hendricks is one of those guys. I wonder if nutrition was maybe taken more serious, what he could have really been at 170.
Look, that guy hit like a Mack truck. Naturally gifted athlete. If nutrition was taken more seriously, discipline maybe. Towards the end of his career, I just seemed like things were falling apart. It just seemed like he was taking for granted his natural skills and what he developed over time as in the gym.
I'm really surprised he has ended up in Bellator. I'm really surprised.
I know. I mean, he has the natural skills to have success against low-level fighters.
Even at middleweight, it's so shallow at 185 in Bellator. Like, you know, it's just – I'm just surprised. I mean, he was supposed to have that bare-knuckle fight, but that didn't take place. He was supposed to fight Brandon Ward, and obviously that organization couldn't pay the fighters. You know, it's unfortunate for those fighters that were on that card. But, I mean, look, GSP, I mean, he's the greatest MMA fighter of all time in my mind.
Yeah. Yeah. I the one pushback is I still feel like Jones is, but the fact that he has a drug history.
There's too many. Look, we know there's asterisk next to it, but I say there's asterisk. It's plural with John Jones.
Yeah.
I think John Jones is an incredible fighter, but because of all the drug testing issues in terms of, you know, performance enhancing drugs, it's tough for me to sit there and say Jones is the greatest. It's just tough.
Yeah.
Because I, you know, even if you're the biggest John Jones fan, you can't sit here and honestly say you think he's a clean fighter. We don't know.
Yep.
It's a big unknown with Jones. Great fighter. Great fighter. Just so much. And, you know, and I think, and I mean, I get, look, if you're in, you know, the president of John Jones fan club, maybe just sit there and say Jones has been careless with supplements. That may be the case. You know, who was it that got handed a suspension by USADA? Oh, he got 10 months. God, I can't think of his name off the top of my head. I can see his face, but I can't think of his name. But he was basically, his statement was essentially, hey, guys, we need to be monitoring what we're putting in our bodies because we don't know what's in there. You know, and that's an issue. I mean, that's an issue.
Totally. But what you said is right. You can't say John Jones is the greatest fighter of all time without adding the asterisks.
Yeah.
But you can say it would just be, you can just say, he's the best fighter of all time. And then end the sentence there.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. The other, one of the other big news over the past couple of days was the PFL announcing they've got a 2-year broadcasting deal with ESPN. Tremendous news for the organization. I had heard about this recently, that this was something that was in discussion. NBC did have matching rights on this, so they elected not to match the offer that ESPN put there. You know, this is an awesome deal for PFL. I mean, it's great for them. Obviously, it's going to put them in front of more eyeballs, but let's not kid ourselves. You know, the ESPN picked up the phone and called Dana White and said, "Hey, are you cool with us putting PFL on ESPN?" And I think that says a lot about how the PFL is viewed by the UFC. I think that the PFL could be used by the UFC as a way to show for the antitrust lawsuit that, hey, there's legitimate competition out there. So overall, I think it's an awesome deal for the fighters. I think it was interesting that on the announcement on Ariel's show that you bring the quote unquote face of PFL and it's Kayla Harrison. I think that, and I understand why they did that, but I also maybe think it says a lot about maybe the lack of star power that the PFL has now. I mean, they've got some quality fighters, but, you know, they're not going to do a middleweight tournament in 2019, as they'll be doing a women's lightweight tournament, which I understand why they're doing it. Like, I like what Kayla Harrison said about, hey, I don't cut weight. I'm not a fan. You know, I like what she said there, but there's also that part of me that says, if Bellator, who's been trying to develop a women's 145 pound division for what, 3 years, probably 4 years, maybe, UFC hasn't been able to develop a women's 145-pound division. They've just done one-off fights. What I feel like all this lightweight tournament for PFL is going to be is bantamweight and featherweight fighters.
Wow, bantamweight to 155. You're right, though. Totally. Look, they're not going to develop a division, but that's okay.
Don't call it a lightweight tournament. We know what it really is. It's a Kayla Harrison tournament.
And I tell you what, that's what they should do.
Totally. She has the it factor, you know. But I just, are you going to put compelling fights in the rest of the field that's going to get people interested?
I think so. I think, look, this is a great move by the PFL. I mean, the one thing is, not really sure what the money is. I'm pretty sure it's not a lot of money. In terms of like the deal with ESPN. If it is a lot of money, then all the power to them. The business model the PFL was doing was not something that could have lasted. The money they were throwing out there for the purses.
Well, and along those lines, Daniel, you're talking about a promotion that doesn't believe in doing local ticket sellers. So there's literally no ticket sales.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I heard stories of like they were handing out fistful of tickets in these cities just to get people in the venue. Like I think that is one of their flaws business wise is they can't sell tickets. And this is when your initials are not UFC in the MMA industry, it's tough to sell tickets. You have to use local ticket sellers.
That's the thingy, man. This thing was not sustainable. And I think for so many different levels, I think the move to ESPN Plus is the one thing that could really right this ship around, because it makes your promotion relevant. You mentioned the eyeballs. I think you put the New Year's Eve show on ESPN 2, that has a lot of potential. That really does. And at least they have Kayla Harrison. You know, there aren't a lot of potential stars that aren't in the UFC. And Kayla Harrison's one of them. And the tournament just going to be just a buffet for Kayla Harrison just to pick that plate, eat it, and move on. It'll be easy.
I think one of the issues, and I've had this conversation with multiple people in the MMA industry about this. I think an issue PFL has when you're catering to a North American audience, half your roster can't be speaking other languages. Because how do you promote them?
Yeah. It's a great point.
It's a major problem they have. I mean, look, there are great international fighters they have on under their roster. But how do you promote those people to draw an audience to ESPN2 or ESPN+? I mean, the thing I look at, like, it's great for PFL, but is it going to raise subscriptions to ESPN+? I don't see that. Because the people who are watching PFL probably already have an ESPN Plus subscription.
Yeah, from ESPN Plus's perspective, PFL isn't going to drive people to subscribe. What it will do, though, is keep people on the service in terms of, like, more time spent watching content on ESPN Plus. So if you only subscribe for the UFC, PFL content is going to make you continue to watch it more often during the week, which in turn makes you think that ESPN Plus is more valuable, which in turn means you probably won't unsubscribe. But PFL is definitely not what I would consider a driver property that drives somebody there. But there's value there in that it can help keep someone there more time watching ESPN Plus. So value there.
Well, look at it like this, Daniel, though. I mean, you pay for – if you just want ESPN Plus for – MMA content only. That's all you care about. So you're paying $4.99 a month for the UFC and PFL starting in May. On the other hand, you got to pay $9.99 a month with DAZN for Bellator content.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's an easy choice for sure. And the thing is, man, for ESPN Plus, they're just offering – it's two different plates. You know, Bellator is just a nice little meal, man, a nice little hamburger. But the UFC, I mean, it's a steak. And then PFL, it's that side dish. You know, it's that nice potato salad, some French fries to go with your steak.
But, I mean, look, at the end of the day, it's great for PFL. I still have the same questions I have about PFL. I mean, is – you know, what are the fights you put together that ultimately get people excited? I love the format. I'm a big fan of the format. But I still have the same concerns I had with PFL that I had 6 months ago. And also, they got to change the way they do some of these tiebreakers, too. You know, I've talked to many managers who despise this whole, the first round has more weight than the second round. Because that rule is so beneficial to wrestlers, it is crazy. Because all you got to do is score a takedown the opening round and realize, oh, well, for the second 5 minutes, I don't got to do crap. I can just run around for 5 minutes and I walk away and move on.
In two-round fights, those tiebreaker rules need to change, simply put. Awful. They do. Yeah. PFL has a lot to work on, but it was a positive week for them because a promotion – any promotion is not the UFC or Bellator. You think it might close doors in a year. And this was the type of deal that looks like it'll keep the doors open for the PFL for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, it's just, you know, can they get to where people want to watch them? You know, the other big news was, of course, on Monday, the Nevada Commission hearing was revealed that Dylan Danis' agreement for his quote-unquote role in the 229 brawl, which, quite frankly, I mean, he was defending himself from a guy flying off the cage to fight him. 7 months, $7,500 fine, which is a lot less than what I'd heard Nevada was seeking in terms of that. A lot less. This is my problem with this whole situation, is Nevada knew. They dragged this thing on way too long. Way too long. Whether you like, I don't know how many people out there truly like Dylan Danis, or hate, which is probably the majority of people, Nevada screwed with his career for the last 3 months. They really did. Bellator wanted him on the January 26th card, couldn't put it on because of this issue. They wanted him on the February 16th card, couldn't put him on this issue. My guess is that fact is he'll be on that May 11th card in the Chicago area for the Chandler Pitbull card. But I still don't know how he got any suspension. For what? Talking shit? Is that why we're suspending him 7 months? And this whole, like, they're still, like, they want to regulate free speech. Like, Nevada, I've had someone say this to me, said, if you really notice, Nevada's no longer getting boxing fights. If they start trying to regulate free speech, I think they're going to lose all major MMA fights. And they're not, to me, they're not the, you know, the Nevada Commission has always been looked at as like this premier commission. To me, they're not anymore.
Yeah, they've made a whole lot of mistakes, and this, to me, is another one.
Could you imagine Conor comes out and they try to do this whole free speech thing, you can't trash talk type thing, and Conor says, I'm not fighting in Nevada anymore? You want to bet those commissioners don't have a job anymore?
Money talks.
Oh, God, could you imagine if you're the governor who probably doesn't care about MMA at all he cares about is the tax revenue that comes in on it, and they come in and say, hey, governor, we got a little problem. What's up? So our commission is, once trash talking kind of toned down in combat sports, and Conor McGregor has said he'll no longer fight in our state. That governor's like, go fire those commissioners. Let's point some new ones on there. Let's get rid of that rule. We need Conor McGregor.
Yeah. The governor's gonna have a problem with that, and it's all about money. The commission took money out of Dennis's pockets because their process is screwed up.
We're selling fights here.
Yeah, we are. This is no different than
what the WWE does every week. We're selling entertainment. We got to get people excited.
Yeah, and you're right in that the punishment was not warranted. You're totally right. The dude was just outside. They jumped out. Khabib attacked him. He defended himself. The idea that he got that suspension is asinine.
Dude, the fine that they were seeking, asinine. When I heard that number, I was like, you have got to be kidding me. For a guy who at the end of the day was defending himself, and I guess a lot of people ask me this question about the Islam Makhachev and Rizvan, what's his last name, is it Magomed? Rizvan is one of the partners in Dominance MMA. And it, based on some things I've heard over the last week, it sounds like Nevada's trying to build a case against Rizvan in terms of his role. And, you know, Bob Bennett and Anthony Marnell. Bob Bennett is the executive director, but Anthony Marnell really runs that commission. They're trying, you know, they've made it clear that they're not done with this whole 229 fiasco. So we'll see what happens there. Let's briefly mention, and we'll end on this note, the last weekend. Thiago Santos, big win by him. You got to think if Jones wins on Saturday night and it's not, and Daniel Cormier is not his next fight, it's got to be Thiago Santos.
Yeah, he looked great against Jan Blachowicz. Two rounds where they were kind of close, and then Santos went and unloaded in that third round. He's definitely put himself in contention, and he's a great fighter, and he's real exciting. Jason, the other things that jumped out to me on this card, Stefan Struve got demolished in round one, came out in round two like a different fighter, took down Marcos Rogério de Lima and tapped him out.
Dude, he didn't land one strike in the fight.
Yeah, nuts.
Like, that first round was like awful. And then you hear Stefan after the fact and, you know, he probably should retire.
Yeah. He should. He isn't super confident that it will or won't happen, which is the most honest way of retiring a fighter could do. Man, Peter Yan really impressed me against John Dodson for sure. Dodson did get tired in that third round. That's something I actually didn't expect, but Yan looks great in bantamweight. And guys, if you haven't seen it, Dwight Grant's knockout over Carlo Pettersoli Jr. in the prelims was awesome. Oh man.
Carlo was like protesting a stoppage. First off, your mouthpiece like literally landed in the fifth row. And two, like you were out cold, and then you, as a fight's over, you're trying to wrestle the ref. You were out, bro.
Dude, yeah, totally. That was.
That's one of those ones where, like, the corner needs to come up to him and go, Carlo, man, yeah, that's a good stoppage, man. You're out.
Yeah, totally. Great, great win by Dwight Graham.
I was watching, I was preparing for an interview I had yesterday, and I was watching this fight, and Josh Hill was a commentary on the fight, and the fight was heading into the third round, and he's basically like, I tell my corners, if I'm down two rounds to nothing, you better tell me. And the Carlo fight, when I saw it knock, I'm like, please, someone in his corner, talk some sense into him to say, hey, you got knocked the F out.
Yeah. Don't make a mistake. Don't make a mistake. You'll regret. You're done. This fight's over. Dwight Grant's the winner.
I'll tell you a true story. So, that was a Saturday afternoon card. And, so I'm watching it, and, my wife was doing stuff around the house, and, like, I'm just sitting there, I've got the TV off, and, it's like, the card's over, and she goes, is the card over? I go, oh, yeah. I go, oh, this isn't FS1 pacing, honey, anymore. This is ESPN pacing.
So true, man. The pacing is great, especially. Oh, like,
I think it was Mookie Alexander tweeted the other day, I guess, for the boxing card in FS1. He was like, yeah, it's the horrible FS1 pacing. Yeah. Yeah, the pacing on ESPN, God, it's such an enjoyable experience.
Yeah.
No more of this, time-filling crap they were doing. Thank God.
No more of the 7-hour commitments.
Yeah. No. Of course, on Saturday, you had Bellator 217, which your analysis of what it was earlier on, spot on. This was just a regionalized card for the Iowan audience. Sold-out crowd. Apparently, the attendance was like around 8,700. James Gallagher gets the win. Gets him back on track. But let's call this fight what it was. It was a showcase fight for James Gallagher. When you look at Stephen Graham, who came in the fight 6-3, and one of the things of I love about Tapology is you can see his opponent's record when they fought, and here, and this is as pro, his first pro fight, he was facing another guy who had pro debut. Second fight, which he lost, was against a guy 0-3. Then he fought a guy 5-8, another 0-3 fighter, 2-16 fighter, 1-3 fighter, 4-5, 3-0, and 9-14. So, folks, it's very clear what that fight was. It was a showcase fight for James Gallagher. And if I was Bellator, I'd keep doing those fights with James Gallagher and put him in Dublin. Why have him fight anywhere else? Just do like three cards a year in Dublin, have James Gallagher headline him against a guy that you expect James Gallagher to beat. Because there's a lot of guys who would love to fight James Gallagher. And the reason is, they all think it's an easy fight for him.
Yeah. I think, Bellator has a nice little business model. Fight didn't really matter. James Gallagher went out, tapped him out. Good little win. Good business model. But I think they should risk it all. I want to see him in the featherweight tournament. He's probably not going to go too far. But in a 16-man field, James Gallagher has to be a part of it.
Yeah, you'd have to be, man, you'd have to put the right matchup. So, but yeah, I mean, I think it's a good chance he does he does get in there. But that's what that fight was. It was nothing more than a showcase fight. That's all that was.
That's what that card was.
That was a hand-picked opponent, folks. That was a hand-picked opponent. So, solid performance by James Gallagher, but you have to also be honest about what that fight was. I mean, it's just, and look, don't blame Bellator for doing it. I think it's a smart move by Bellator, but yeah. So Bellator, their next event's not till like March 22nd, I want to say. The card in Oklahoma headlined by Emmanuel Sanchez, which I believe only one fight's have been officially announced for that fight card.
Wow, that's not good.
Then the following week, they're in Southern California that's the Koreshkov-Larkin fight. That's a good fight. Looking forward to that one. Apparently, Joe Schilling's going to be fighting Keith Barry, I believe, on that card. Yeah, that card, Oklahoma card, one of the two.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. So, That's really what's going on in MMA. So, as always, we appreciate you checking out the podcast. Of course, be sure to check out our presenting sponsor, Roman. Get a free online visit by going to getroman.com/MMA report. That's getroman.com/MMA report. Of course, we'll be back next week as we'll recap what happened at UFC 235. We get you ready for the UFC on ESPN Plus 4 card, which is in Kansas. Of course, ever have any questions or comments, just hit us up on social media. I am at Jason_Floyd. Daniel is at Daniel Galvan DGG. So let's go wrap it up for this week's episode of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a Rush the Field quick fix on Radio Influence.
And this week, we take a look at the burnt orange and white of the Texas Longhorns, UT Austin, Hook'em Horns, OK Hook'em, as Tom Herman would say, Chris, coming off a phenomenal season this year. We thought that it would take maybe a year or two for Tom Herman to bring this program back to where Longhorn fans felt that it should be. And this season, they might have been ahead of schedule, but a really good season, and the future does look incredibly bright for this Texas Longhorn team.
You know, it does. He's recruiting well. I had some news in my notebook this week, the college football notebook on LandryFootball.com. He's really doing a good job recruiting, and the secondary, he's losing a lot of guys, but he's got one of the better safeties in the country coming back. And I'm not so sure, even losing three members of the secondary, that they may not even be better this coming year. This is a pretty good defense. It's the defense that impresses me the most of the big-time programs in the Big 12. And as they kind of continue to develop their offense under Tom, it's going to be interesting to see if they can continue to close the gap on Oklahoma. One of the great traditions, tradition-rich programs of college football, from Bevo to Big Bertha to the Eyes of Texas to the Hook'em Horns to the Texas Fight. And, you know, it's certainly one of the great traditions.
Rush the Field with Scott Seidenberg and Chris Leandry can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.